sort of like slamming your fingers on the door and saying, oh boy, let's do that again 2 months from now.
Congressman Don Young on a 2-month payroll tax cut deal. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 19th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, an update on efforts to get winter fuel to Nome.
We're confident with the Coast Guard's assistance and the Healy's assistance that this is 100% doable.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
Republicans in the U.S. House are rejecting a plan to extend the popular payroll tax cut Americans are now getting. The bill that's dead in the water also includes extending long-term unemployment benefits to and aid to needy families. APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington.
The stalemate draws Congress closer to the end of the year when the tax break expires, and working Americans will see their taxes go back up about $1,000. Both of Alaska's senators voted for the measure on Saturday. The tally was overwhelmingly in favor and bipartisan, 89 to 10. Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich agree they would have preferred a longer plan rather than the 2-month temporary extension passed, but both say it was a move in the right direction because it would keep the payroll tax cut in place come January. And the bill includes something both were pushing for, the Obama administration's swift decision on an oil pipeline from Canada's tar sands through the lower 48. Senator Begich's press secretary in Anchorage, Julie Haskett.
The senator was pleased with what happened over the weekend, pleased in the sense that they got a deal, at least for 2 months, to extend the payroll and the unemployment tax cuts and have the Keystone Pipeline in there.
The deal that made it through the Senate looked like it would pass the House until Republican Speaker John Boehner announced Sunday that he no longer liked the bill and it didn't have enough GOP support. Julie Haskett says that's raised the ire of Democrats like her boss.
This was a bipartisan effort, overwhelmingly passed in Congress by both Republicans and Democrats in a negotiated deal, and now the House is just going to play games, politics as usual, just a few days before Christmas, which is really just too bad. And frankly, it's reckless and it's irresponsible.
Now there's a standoff in Congress, with the leader of Senate Democrats saying he won't call his chamber back to work next week, and the House refusing to move forward. Alaska's senators may be on board with the bill, but over in the other body, House Republican Don Young says he doesn't support it. While Julie Haskett directs blame at the House, Representative Young says the Senate is the dysfunctional body.
I'm tired of the Senate telling us what to do all the time. And that's all Harry Reid's been doing, you know, and he's got away with it. It's always the Republicans that don't want to work. We've said all along that, you know, we want to solve this problem.
Young likes that the bill speeds up the timeline for the White House to decide permitting on the Keystone Pipeline, something Republicans push for and won. He thinks it should go further and incentivize drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, but GOP leadership didn't agree.
I'd put Anwar in the same thing. You really want to argue about something, but no, they wouldn't do that. They did this because they think it's a quicker solution to job creation.
The reason Don Young doesn't like this bill is because of its short 2-month timeline. He says they should forge a longer deal. That's what Speaker Boehner is saying, too. Democrats are crying foul over that, though, because some Republicans didn't want to see the tax break continued at all. Still, Congressman Young says he doesn't want to keep having the same arguments every couple months. He says, get it done.
Why would you? It's sort of like slamming your fingers on a door and saying, oh boy, let's do that again 2 months from now. Once you get your hand out of it, you should leave it alone.
For now, though, the march toward the end of the year continues with no deal on the table. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has granted a permit to ConocoPhillips Alaska that will give the company access to the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska. The Corps on Monday announced it was granting the permit to cross the Colville River on the North Slope. The Corps in February 2010 denied a permit for a bridge and said a buried pipe would be less environmentally damaging. ConocoPhillips appealed, and the Corps sought a review of the proposal by the Environmental Protection Agency and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The agencies 2 weeks ago signed off on bridge crossings if mitigation measures were met. The Corps announcement says the permit authorizes construction of a drill pad, an access road for bridge crossings, and new pipeline support structures. Debris from last March's Japan tsunami has begun arriving on the West Coast much earlier than computer models predicted it would. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
Last week at a news conference in Port Angeles, Washington, oceanographer Kurt Ebbesmeyer showed off a Japanese fishery float that beach cleaning crews found a couple of weeks ago at the tip of the Olympic Peninsula near Nia Bay. He said there's no doubt that there are other places where debris is coming ashore as well. Ebbesmeyer is well known for his studies tracking rubber ducks and sneakers that spilled in the ocean from cargo vessels. He stresses that he's not disputing the computer models that say it'll take several years for the debris to cross the Pacific. At the news conference, he said those models don't account for winds. They simply say where the water goes.
They're looking at where the water is going to be, and the water will be here in a couple of years. But the winds, and the water moves about 7 miles a day, but the winds can push an object like this at 20 miles a day, three times faster than water.
The Japanese floats ride high in the water, so they catch a lot of wind. Ebbesmeyer says there's going to be a lot of debris from the tsunami, and people should be prepared. He's suggesting cleanup workers carry Geiger counters to detect radioactivity, but so far public health officials are saying any radiation is likely to be minimal. Nobody's found any tsunami debris in Alaska yet, but a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration circulation model indicates some is likely to get as far north as southeast, particularly the outer coast. By this time, Ebbesmeyer has a lot of experience with floating debris. He runs a website for beachcombers called flotsametrics.com, and his expertise has been used in search and rescue efforts. At the Washington News Conference, he stressed that things that wash up from the tsunami disaster could very well hold a lot of meaning for people back in Japan. An estimated 20,000 died in the tsunami, and some of the things now floating across the Pacific, like detached aircraft wings, can easily be traced.
So if you see an aircraft wing in the surf, get the number. I'm not sure that it'd be worth very much, but to some Japanese family who might have lost the plane and a loved one with it, you are going to make friends for life.
The size of the floating debris field from Japan is truly enormous. This fall, the Russian research ship Paleta reported sailing through many miles of it as it made the crossing between Hawaii and Hokkaido. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly.
I think it's safe to say that we have grave concerns over a 30% increase to bring this year in at 58 million pounds of herring.
Herring fishery squabbles in Sitka. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, which has been providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory.
You can find APRN headlines and more online at AlaskaPublic.org. Local, national, and international news, upcoming events, and statewide community conversation. AlaskaPublic.org, connecting you to Alaska one story at a time.
The pieces are coming together for Sitna-Sauk's historic fuel delivery later this month in Nome. The first-ever winter fuel delivery in western Alaska relies on a double-hulled Russian tanker that may be led through the ice by the Coast Guard's only working icebreaker. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
The Russian tanker, the Renda, was docking in South Korea today to be filled with the 1.5 million gallons of fuel bound for Nome. Sitna-Sauk board chair Jason Evans says the current plan is for the tanker to head north and be at the ice edge somewhere near St. Lawrence Island around Christmas Day. The ice-class tanker could then meet up with the Coast Guard cutter Healy to be escorted through the ice to Nome. That journey from the ice edge to Nome could take around 3 days, but before the tanker meets the ice, Evans says the role of the Healy is still not finalized.
And the Coast Guard is continuing to look at making the Healy available to escort Dorinda in. There's a lot of factors into that decision, and you know, they haven't said for sure one way or the other because they're trying to balance their schedule not only for this, but for the ship that needs to be down into Seattle.
The Healy is currently in Dutch Harbor for a logistics port call following 7 months of scientific missions and patrol. Evan says he's in frequent meetings with Coast Guard personnel on the status of the unique mission.
We're very hopeful that the schedule allows the Healy to stay in the area.
The tanker Renda is able to break through 4 feet of ice itself, while the Healy can break up to 8 feet. Evan says he's working with NOAA weather officials to ensure they can find a window of good weather, as well as be able to find the best ice conditions.
The ice has been very favorable. It's all new generation ice. It's not very thick, but you know, it is certainly getting colder and thickening up each day, but it's very manageable at this point in time.
Once the vessels get close, there are more logistics questions. The Healy can only get to within a mile of Nome due to shallow water. The Renda, however, carries over a mile of hosing that could be run across the ice to connect to the port's fuel transfer equipment. The ultimate price of that fuel is still unknown.
You know, until that fuel is in the tanks, we won't have a final cost on that.
The fuel order was originally scheduled to be delivered by Delta Western, but their barge was delayed by the November storm and had to turn around when it met ice. Sitnasauk is now working with an Alaska-based company, Vitus Marine, to bring the fuel in on the Renda. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
The West Coast Occupy movement could end up affecting the southeast city of Wrangell. Shipping interruptions caused by port protests may delay a time-sensitive streetlight project in Wrangell. KSDK's Charlotte Duran has the details.
This country is ripe for the change that this movement represents.
Occupy protests have been going on since September. Last week, West Coast Occupy groups moved from camps to ports. From Seattle to Los Angeles, barge operators and port workers had to shut down operations and delay barge traffic. That included the Port of Oakland.
It's kind of amazing how, you know, some conceivably minor thing that we hear about on the news someplace far away like Oakland can have an effect on someplace equally far away like Wrangell, Alaska.
That's Clay Hammer, Wrangell's Municipal Light and Power Superintendent. His department is waiting to start work on a major project that will switch all of Wrangell's streetlights over to energy-efficient LEDs. This project is funded through a $95,000 grant from the Alaska Energy Authority and Wrangell's Cooperative Association. But the grant requires that the project be completed by August 2012. And Hammer says if protesters continue to delay barge deliveries in Oakland, Wrangell will be stuck with the bill.
At this point, I guess we're really not sure if those components have made it through the Port of Oakland yet. And, of course, they've got to get through the Port of Oakland, and then they've got to get to Silicon Valley where the manufacturer is actually set to work building these things. And my understanding is once they get the components, it won't take that long for them to actually assemble them. But without those components, they can't move ahead. So until those components make it through the Port of Oakland, the whole project is put behind.
Hammer says delivery delays to Oakland's port have already set the LED light replacement project back by a month. Any more delays mean the city may not be able to make the grant deadline.
What could end up happening is if we do not get all these lights installed by August 31st, is that we would have to basically reimburse them for the cost of those lights.
The lights are being manufactured by SeaTac Lighting LLC, based out of Seattle, Washington. Hammer says barges are a crucial shipping link between the lower 48 to island communities in Southeast. That's something he thinks Occupy protesters should consider.
It affects everything. Everything that we get comes through the barge lines. It's either comes on the barge or it's flown, and it's really expensive to fly stuff, so the majority of that is actually coming in on the barges.
Wrangell Municipal Light and Power hopes for the LED installation to begin sometime in early February. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Charlotte Duran.
it could be a record year, at least in volume, for the Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery. A forecast released last week predicts the biggest harvest ever at 29,000 tons. That number is called the guideline harvest level, or GHL, and this year's number is a big change from last year's. But Sitka's local tribal government is calling the number irresponsible. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
Last year's GHL was around 19,400 tons. This year, the forecast amount is about 29,000 tons. The 10,000-ton increase is partly due to Fish and Game correcting an error in the way it determined the age of the herring. Dave Gordon is the commercial fisheries area management biologist for Sitka. He says herring are aged by looking at their scales.
So the scales are taken from the herring, and this is actually done in a lab in Juneau, mounted on a slide. And then using microfish type of equipment, they blow that scale up onto a screen.
Once the scale is magnified, the scientists can count lines in it, almost like rings in a tree trunk. Almost.
Not quite as simple as a tree where you just simply count the rings and say the tree is this old. On scales, you have a number of growth rings in a given year, but due to the seasonality changes of growth that a herring experiences, you get these what they call annulus or check marks, where you note that change in the basically the distance between the different growth rings.
Count the annulus, know the age, but they're easy to misread. And as a result, Gordon says Fish and Game had incorrect data from 1999 until 2010.
Since that experience, we certainly have become a lot more rigorous in setting a criteria as to what would be called an annulus. If an ager has a question about a particular, you know, what he might think is an annulus, he's supposed to involve other readers to, you know, help and determine whether to call it an annulus or not.
Now, before we go any further, know this. The model used to create the forecast is complicated, and it includes many factors, everything from abundance to survival rates to maturation rates to age. But basically, if one of those variables is off, in this case, age, you get a different result. Gordon says the result of the incorrect data was that scientists were underestimating the biomass and therefore setting a lower GHL. In fact, last year they used a different model altogether because they caught the incorrect ages in time. He says the jump, then, from 19,400 tons last year to about 29,000 tons this year is the result of putting the bar back where it should be. But not everyone agrees with that assessment.
Personal reaction, I was flabbergasted.
That's Jeff Feldpouch, resource director for the Sitka Tribe of Alaska.
I think it's safe to say that we have grave concerns over a 30% increase over last year's GHL to bring this year in at 58 million pounds of herring. And I think it's safe to say that, we feel it would be irresponsible to harvest the entire GHL.
The tribe has long expressed concerns over the commercial fishery, namely that the herring are being overfished. Southeast natives harvest herring roe on hemlock branches as a traditional food.
We look back at historic levels from the late 1800s, early 1900s. Herring stocks, herring populated all of Southeast, enough so that there are remnants of herring reduction plants up and down Chatham Strait, but there's no herring there anymore, at least viable stocks to subsist on or commercially fish.
The tribe's herring committee brought forth a proposal to establish a subsistence-only zone along Sitka's road system. It failed to get the recommendation of a local advisory committee, but will still proceed to the Board of Fish for consideration in February. Meanwhile, the preliminary GHL of 29,000 tons is not set in stone. Winter test fisheries will take place in January, and a final forecast will be announced in late February. Gordon says the number can sometimes change by as much as 10%. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority and BP.
The National Weather Service is predicting another Chinook for South Central Alaska starting tomorrow. If it materializes, it will be the fourth windy and warm event of the season. The last Chinook blew through Anchorage yesterday with winds up to 104 miles an hour on the hillside and 40 miles an hour in town. Temperatures climbed as high as 46 degrees. Dave Snyder is a forecaster with the National Weather Service. He says Tuesday's event won't be as warm and will mostly affect higher elevations.
This next one probably won't be quite as bad. The last Chinook that we had over the weekend, it got a lot stronger because there wasn't as much protection from some of the colder air that usually hangs out in the valley. So this time the colder air is back, and a lot of the stronger winds will probably remain over some of the higher terrain.
Snyder says Chinooks are tricky to forecast, but he says it looks like this one will be the last for South Central, at least for a while. Snyder says he's new to Alaska, but colleagues report this winter has been an odd one.
But it does sound like this is somewhat unusual to have this number, this frequency of storms, and not only the frequency of storms, but ones that are producing such high-end Chinook events.
After Tuesday, the forecast is calling for some snow and colder temperatures. The ConocoPhillips liquid natural gas plant in Nikiski that was mothballed last month has gotten a reprieve. The company announced last week that new contracts will send more work to the facility, but it doesn't necessarily mean new jobs. KDLL's Shaylin Cochran has more.
New business for a natural gas plant in Nikiski means more than just a few lines on a corporate payroll sheet. It means more people in the community. That, according to Felix Martinez, is the big takeaway from the news that ConocoPhillips has some more business on the horizon, including a contract with Buccaneer Energy for their Kenai Loop project. I spoke with Felix, who, along with his wife Pamela, owns the M&M market in Nikiski. He was happy to hear that the plant will not be closing permanently anytime soon because the jobs provided by companies like Conoco are the lifeblood of a small town.
I mean, we're the shrimp on the back of the whale. You know, we're eating the crust off their barnacles, and it's good to us. We don't know any better.
The plant currently employs about 50 people, and these new contracts will not change that, according to Conoco spokesperson Natalie Lohman.
Well, the plant is still in a kind of preservation mode right now, but ConocoPhillips has negotiated new gas contracts and an agreement to lease an LNG tanker, and that will allow the LNG plant to resume exports in mid-2012.
She says there have not yet been any plans made about the future of the plant beyond next year. Borough Mayor Mike Navarre was also happy to hear that there was new demand for the services provided in Nikiski.
Well, I'm pleased by the news, and obviously we're confident that the Kenai Peninsula and the oil and gas development in Cook Inlet has a bright future, and this is certainly a good indicator of that.
For local business owners, at least one more year of production from that plant is music to their ears. Reporting from Nikiski, I'm Shaylin Cochran.
The Bristol Bay Native Association is getting ready to plan a transit system for Bristol Bay. BBNA officials say the service could link people who live in southwest Alaska's outlying villages to regional hubs like Dillingham for work, medical care, and other services. KDLG's Dacia Eaton has more.
Patty Hyeno is the program development director for BBNA. She wrote the grant that will fund the development of a Bristol Bay regional transit plan.
It may be like a small bus service, and we don't know, you know, until we go through that planning process, find out what people want and what, you know, people need, that we won't know exactly how it will work. And then, of course, once we get that plan in place, it would take some time to get it funded and, and running.
A $75,000 Federal Transit Administration grant will fund the planning process. BBNA is one of 9 tribal organizations awarded funds for transit projects in Alaska. Nationwide, the grants are funding 67 separate projects in 25 states. The projects range from initial planning in communities that have never been served by public transit, like in Southwest Alaska, to maintenance and expansion of transit programs. Hayano says BBNA has letters of support from the City of Dillingham and the City of Aleknagik for development of the plan, and 3 regional tribal organizations are also signed onto the grant, including the Chogyang Tribal Council, the Aleknagik Traditional Council, and the Ikuk Village Council. Right now, Hayano says, several service providers run their own transport, including Kanakanak Hospital, Dillingham Senior Center, and Aleknagik Senior Services. Hayano.
Say like Aleknagik, they have a senior transportation bus that brings people into Dillingham for services. Now, say in 10 years or so, their bus is worn out. If they are not a part of a coordinated transit plan, they're not eligible for more funds to replace that. This helps those service providers that are serving right now, but it will also help people that want to provide in the future.
Hayano says the coordinated plan will not only benefit disabled and elderly people, but also those commuting to work, which even from the village closest to Dillingham, Aleknagik, can be a challenge. Hayano describes her own commute.
I live on the North Shore, a couple miles downriver from the community of Aleknagik. And so, in the summer, it's a boat ride to the South Shore Landing and then drive to town.
In the winter, she crosses the ice by snow machine, then hops into her truck to drive 20 or so miles to work. Sometimes the commute is so dangerous that she's holed up in a Dillingham hotel or staying with friends for days or weeks at a time. People throughout Bristol Bay have slightly different versions of Hayano's commute. Some include airplanes and four-wheelers, in addition to boats and snow machines, which the coordinated transit plan, Hayano says, will simplify. BBNA will dig into the project once they receive funding in the new year. Hayano.
We've planned to do this with the help of a consultant in order to capture all of the transit issues.
Hayano says the planning process will include gathering information from communities about their perceived needs. If all goes well, the Bristol Bay Regional Transit Plan will be completed within a year or so. Then Hayano says BBNA will likely apply for more federal funds to make the plan a reality. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Nome, Charlotte Duran in Wrangell, Ed Ronco in Sitka, Shaylin Cochran in Kenai, and Daisha Eaton in Dillingham. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer, Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.